Hello, my name is Melissa Harlinski. I'm the project manager for Department of Public Works, Anne Arundel County. This is the Sprays Farm Park Shoreline Improvements public meeting. This is our second public meeting. Everyone's probably already aware of that. We had one about 2 years ago. It was a different design. We could not get MDE or Army Corps to be on board with it, so they would not permit it. So we have now hired Baylan to give us a much better, new and improved design with less environmental impacts. So we're going to present to you this design today. As I already mentioned, tonight's meeting will be audio recorded. So after the meeting, we will, on the OPUC website, it'll go to past meetings, and for 2 weeks you can comment. You can either email me and comment directly, or you can comment on that page, and that will be open for only 2 weeks. And then after 2 weeks, we'll put together all of the comments and the meeting minutes, and then 1 month after this meeting, 1 month, 4 weeks from now, we will email and mail out the meeting minutes and the response to comments. So, like I said, my name's Melissa Harlinski. We have Bruce Brushy here from Park and Rec. He's a project manager on the Park and Rec side, Rec and Park side. And from Baylan, we have Anna Johnson and Evan Mazur. And back there, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Lynn Berry.
She is in charge of coming to all the public meetings and getting set up with the audio equipment and all of the schedule and all of the meeting places. So I'm going to hand it over to Anna.
Okay, thanks, Mel. Like Mel said, my name is Anna Johnson. I'm an engineer with Baylan Consultants and Designers. We are an environmental engineering firm, and this is exactly the type of projects we do. We do a lot of capital improvement projects for Anne Arundel County, looking at shoreline improvements and environmental uplift and that type of thing. So today what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to give a little background of how we got to the point where we are today, and then we'll touch on existing conditions. But if you guys are here, you probably visit the park, you probably know what it's like there, and then we're going to go through the design components that we've come up with, and then a little bit about schedule, contact information, and then we'll open it up to questions and answers. So, project background, the park is approximately 57 acres big, and it's what's called a passive use park. So the main activities here are picnicking and walking trails, natural areas. It has a historical residence and about 800 feet of shoreline. Along that shoreline, erosion is at about 2 feet per year of shoreline being lost every single year. And so that has resulted in these tall, unsafe, unsteady banks along the area that can be difficult to access. The shoreline can be difficult to access, and it also has no ADA compliance. So the design, the county initially began the design in 2017, and I think Mel already touched on this. There was a presentation in February of 2021 that presented a bigger design, and what happened was the environmental impacts for the tidal area were too large, so we're now kind of revisiting that. The Corps of Engineers and MDE, who regulate the tidal waters in Maryland, did not want to approve that design. So now we've come in and we're looking at kind of alternatives of where we can minimize the impacts that this project would have while still achieving the goals that we have. So we started in 2022. And so I'll talk a little bit about the existing conditions. We've kind of broken this out into the west shoreline and then the east shoreline. And we have the marsh that kind of splits the two areas that we'll be looking at. So the west shoreline is where we have these very tall undercut banks where you can see that the waves and coastal flows have kind of eaten away at the bottom, which makes the top unstable, and then it comes down. So then we actually looked at the site today. So the previously there was this fence where you could see the posts are exposed, and so now this is a danger. If you lean on the fence, this post is unsteady. But it does look, I will say, Reckon Parks looks like you guys went out there and moved the fence recently. So this is obviously a safety concern for this, and the fact that the shoreline is eroding and will continue to erode if we don't do anything. So then the what we're calling the east shoreline is kind of on the other side of the marsh, where you have a much more stable beach area. However, behind that beach area, you are starting to see those tall banks that are kind of bare, and you can tell that they're also experiencing some erosion too. So we don't want to leave that out. We want to address that area as well. A little bit about the access path right now. Like we said, it's just kind of a dirt downtrodden path that has some boards put up to makeshift stairs along the steepest part. Obviously, this actually I tripped on a root walking down here earlier today. So these are the kind of safety issues that are around, and obviously it's absolutely not ADA compliant. So the goals of this project were, first and foremost, we want to reduce the coastal erosion that's eating away at these banks. And we want to do that by implementing what's called living shoreline techniques. But we also, at the same time, need to avoid submerged aquatic vegetation. So that's in the water. This was kind of the big problem with the last design. So right seaward of the shoreline, they have grasses, underwater grasses that grow, which is SAB as we call it. And it's a very protected natural resource. It provides lots and lots of benefits to the Magathy River. And so we want to really minimize any impacts that we have or eliminate any impacts, which is the goal that we're trying to achieve, is to how do we protect these eroding shoreline and eroding banks without impacting the SAB there. So we also want to provide a safe, natural transition from the shoreline to the uplands behind it. Like I said before, those banks are unsteady. The way that it works is that when the flows will eat away at the bottom, and then so you actually lose a chunk of the top at a time. And so you don't know if it's going to be 1 feet or if it could be 5 feet. So we want to make sure that we provide a design that's going to be a safe transition from the water's edge up to the upland area. We want to provide a more formal kayak launch. And we want to make it ADA accessible. And then finally, we just increase the coastal resiliency of the park in general. We understand that future conditions are going to be different than they are today. And what can we do, what can we add now to help better prepare us for these future situations? So just some information for the community meeting. This is the capital improvements project. It's zoned as open space. It's just a shoreline improvements project, so there's no impacts to schools or road configurations. We are anticipating of impacting about half an acre of the park area. Let me see. Anything else that needs to...
No modifications.
No, right. Yeah, no modifications anticipated. The use will still be the same. All that, so... I won't read through necessarily all of these. All right, so this is our proposed design for the west shoreline. So I will kind of start at the water's edge and kind of walk you through what we're proposing to do here. So this right here is what is the SAD area that we're trying to avoid. So what we're proposing is to put some stone structures, and we're going to go just kind of to the limit of the SAD without actually encroaching into it. So we'll put that there, we'll put a stone structure there, and that's going to act like the first line of defense for storm waves and storm surges that come in, is these stone structures here. They're also going to help protect and contain the sand place here that's also going to have marsh plantings on it. So what happens is when the storm waves and the storm surge come here, like you have this buffer along this edge here, so that that helps kind of dissipate and dampen the waves before they can get to the toe of the block, which is right here. The previous design had these structures way further out and much larger, and then it had much more sand fill and marshes to act as that buffer. So in order to provide the adequate protection, we at the toe of the bank, what we're going to do is we're going to add like a cobblestone mix and then add some plants on it. So we're going to fill the voids with sand, and then we're going to plant it so that it continues to look. So you have this green, everything looks green from the top to the bottom. But it does have that extra layer of protection because we don't have that wide marsh buffer that the previous design had. So this will continue to, if storm waves get past this area, this will continue to protect the toe of the bluff. We're going to grade these steep banks here to a much gentler slope, and then we're going to plant it with shrubs and other vegetation to kind of get that green look. Then we'll have the kayak launch and then the ADA accessible path, but I will talk about that when we kind of hone in on those areas. So this is just more of an explanation. This is in between the stone gaps. Here's the stone, and then they're segmented, so there's gaps here. But then this is the marsh. This is all marsh area. This is that cobble toe, reinforced bluff toe that I was talking about. That's gonna help protect this area from becoming this steep bank here. And then we're gonna grade this bank here. We're gonna grade it back and plant it. And then this is the same thing. This is kind of where there was the emergency repair project. So what we're gonna do in that area for a part of it, we're also gonna cover that part with sand and then plant it so that we do have that continuous green, natural environmental uplift area. This is a picture from that emergency repair project, and I think this gives you a good idea of what we're talking about here. So what we're going to do is we're going to take this steep bank here, and we're just going to grade it back so that it has a little bit of a gentler slope there. And then finally, because we're impacting the critical area buffer, then we'll have to do some mitigation. So we're looking at planting some trees in this area, in addition to all the shrubs and the marsh that we're creating. And that's going to be a mitigation for the critical area. So MDE and the Corps of Engineers govern everything or regulate everything that happens seaward of mean high water. The critical area regulates things that happen landward of mean high water. So we have to balance the impacts to all of these regulatory agencies as well as, you know, providing the addressing the project goals.
What was that mean high water that you said?
Mean high water, yep, that's it. So I talked about this, so let me just go. So now for the east shoreline that I was talking about, that is faring a little bit better. You actually have a little bit of a beach there. So what we're going to do, because our intention is just to provide some coastal resiliency, we are just proposing to add it's a dune, but it's a sacrificial dune or a feeder dune. And so what its purpose is it's sand with plantings on it that as the storm surges or the waves come in, it's actually meant to be eroded away. And as the water pulls out, the sand that was eroded away from the dune then gets deposited on that beach. So it's kind of like a self-sustaining system. So, and then that's one of its jobs. The other job is that it's actually going to protect the banks behind it that were looking like they were experiencing some erosion and some scour. So it's also going to help protect that area. And in addition, in the water, what we're proposing is to add, these are reef balls or habitat balls, and then some woody debris. So I'm going to talk about the grading that has to be done. We're going to have to take down a couple trees. And so what we would like to do is to reuse those trees on site as natural features. So what we do is we put them into the beach area. And then let me go back a couple slides to show you kind of the because there's already a tree. So it looks.
Yeah.
So you see this tree here, where, as you can see, like sand is building up on one side of it. So these woody habitat features, you know, they provide habitat uplift. The turtles love to come and bask in the sun on these. You get birds that land. So they provide some habitat, but then they also help retain sand. They're a natural way to kind of help retain sand that's on this beach and act as a little bit of a barrier for some of the waves, too. So that we're proposing those. And then also these reef balls, which this is kind of what they look like. We have some pictures later in the slide or in the presentation that show what these reef balls are. But with these reef balls, they're concrete and they have holes in them. And so they also act as, they're not as effective as stone is at like dissipating wave energy. But they do help with that a little bit, and they also act as habitat for fish. So the smaller fish can swim into these balls to escape the predators. And just, you know, and they live around it. Barnacles can grow on them in the right conditions as well. So these are some of our MDE mitigation strategies. So we are, you know, MDE, because we're placing sand in areas where there wasn't sand before, we have MDE is making us mitigate as well. So these are just some of the strategies of how we can improve that habitat there. All right, so then the kayak launch. So we're doing, we're including a kind of a more formal kayak launch to the site. The design is relatively similar to other kayak launches that the county has been implementing recently at Greenhaven, at Jack Creek Park, at Sully Cove, Downs Park. So if you visited any of those kayak launches, this is similar to what it will look like. There'll be stone containment structures on either side because the sand is piled up so much higher than the sand on either side of the kayak launch will be. It's going to be 20 feet wide, and it's going to start with a 20-foot flat area here that's going to connect to the ADA path, which I'll discuss in the next slide. And then it'll slope down at about 10 to 1, so you can come, drop your kayak here in the sand, and then just drag it down. So this is just a picture from Greenhaven recently, so to kind of give you an idea of what it would look like after construction is completed. All right, and then the ADA accessible path. So we're coming from the existing parking lot, and we're adding a path down that's going to be constructed with permeable pavers. So these are, it's not bituminous pavement. This is actually, these, what they are is like plastic cellular like grid system. And then once you add stone into it, so you get that durability, but it is permeable. So when it rains, there's a layer of collection for stormwater underneath it as well. This is an example of what was implemented at Jack Creek Park, so it'll be something similar. It'll be 8 feet wide, and it'll be graded so that it is ADA compliant as well. So, which will basically be ramps with intermittent landing areas, as they're called. I should add as well. So, from the permeable paver path, you can either go down to the kayak launch, or there'll be what's called a Moby mat, or it's like a temporary type mat that you can lay out if you want to walk over to the beach area, the shoreline area over here. So quickly, I'll touch back on that mitigation that we were talking about. This is what the woody debris features look like. These are the reef structures. This is very deep underwater. This is what they look like exposed. And all the shrub plantings, we're going to be doing about a quarter of an acre of coastal shrubs, almost a half acre of marsh plantings between the west side and the east side of the shoreline. So a lot of habitat improvements, green infrastructure type strategies that we're utilizing here.
Question. You said they're underwater. About how deep or how much water would be above them? So what type of clearance would there be?
shows. So usually they, the location where they're proposed here is quite shallow, so it's pretty going to be pretty much up to the mean high water line.
So in other words, they wouldn't be deep underwater.
Yeah.
They'll be visible.
They'll be visible for
a period of the day. Yeah, and submerge another period of the day. Yeah.
For a point of reference, where is the inlet for the tidal pond?
Right here.
Okay, that's going to be designed to continue functioning.
This is we're not doing anything in this area so that we don't we allow this to continue functioning the way it always
has. Pretty good fish nursery in there.
Water really flows to that little cut there. So that's why we did put the coastal dune here, but we didn't want to add any sand or anything that could affect how that natural cut goes from year to year.
Excuse me, you referred to that as a sacrificial dune. Is that needing to be replenished over time, or?
So the idea is that the dune goes, and its job is to feed the beach. So it's not, in 25, 30 years, it won't exist, and that's okay. That's part of the plan.
The other question is, what's the rough diameter of those reef walls?
I think they're approximately, there's all different sizes, but about 2 feet. Usually 1.5 to 2 feet is what they're going to be.
Size of a crab trap.
So that's all the design components. I did want to touch on construction access. This is something that has not changed from the previous design if you came to the meeting in February 2021. The construction access is still planned to go kind of in front of the 896 Bayberry Drive, and it's going to follow up this Reichen Park's access path. During that time, there'll be lots of coordination to make sure that the trucks aren't coming in and out during school bus times. Right now, we haven't really gotten deep into the design details, but it's going to be, we know that we're going to have approximately 800 to 1,000 cubic yards of sand that's going to have to be brought in, and about 300 tons of rock. So that is going to end up in being about 150 trucks that are going to have to come through this entrance to bring that material in. So, but one way that we have optimized the number of trucks coming through is where we're cutting those banks. Reichen Parks is actually allowing us to place the material in the park so that all that material doesn't have to leave the site. So that's going to cut at least a third of the trucking out. So I think it cuts about 100 trucks that would have had to leave the site. But since we're able to place it into a low-lying, unvegetated area, that'll save that. So in that way, we were able to kind of reduce the amount of trucks that the community would have to see during this time period. This slide is just just restating the goals of the project and how we feel this design is getting the goals, meeting the goals that we're looking for, between adding the shoreline protection without impacts to SAV, park improvements such as ADA path to an improved kayak launch, and then just increasing the coastal resiliency in general of the park.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
The existing entrance to the park is already compromised, without any trucks and stuff. A lot of people just park outside the gate. I'm just saying that some stone replenishment needs to happen there because there is runoff every time it rains into the storm drain at that area.
Okay.
Noted, Bruce.
Could use a new gate. Yeah, I have a question. Where is this, the area, the spoils where you're moving the dirt around? Mm-hmm. Where are you placing it?
So most likely from. Sorry.
Because that's going to be a lot of stuff. There's going to be quite a pile.
Yeah, it's not going to be a pile. We're going to try to spread it out evenly and then create, maybe seed it for some meadow grasses and things like that. But we haven't absolutely finalized the location, but this is the type of area we're looking for. As you can see, this area is flat. And it's not vegetated. We do not intend on taking out any trees or vegetation to accommodate this material.
It's going to be, what, like a foot higher or something like that?
A foot and a half max, I think. Just depending on how much of this flat, unvegetated area we can find. But that's the order of magnitude. It's not going to be a pile. Just be slightly elevated and then some meadow grass is planted on it.
Well, it's going to be temporary.
No, it's not going to be temporary.
Oh, no. So you're not moving the dirt and then putting it back?
No.
No, this is the clear out.
Spreading it.
This is the middle side is taken out. You're looking at the hill.
Okay,
yeah,
got
this
it.
Is for
all right. All right, that makes
it
sense.
It says lightly shaded part of it.
Right.
What kind of feedback did you get from the
sense.
I know there was a concern at one point on the part of the county for the archaeological findings, the Indian mounds and stuff. What was the feedback?
We've done phase one, phase two, and the phase three. So we've done everything. We've recovered. Everything is done. There's no more we have a small archaeology.
It's all fallen into the river.
But we hired a company to go, and they 2 years ago or more, they did a phase one, phase two, phase three. Okay. Phase three is the final one that, you know, they recover, they have a whole report about it.
Yeah.
There's a small area in Balian's design that wasn't in the other design where I am working with the same firm to go out there and survey that small area for archaeological.
Thanks.
But we'll also... there's actually a sign that's already made. We'll have an archaeology sign about the area, and it'll be posted on here. It'll, you know, but we're not going to put it anywhere on site until this is done, because we don't want to put it too close and then it gets eroded, you know.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah. Can we get through the rest of the slides and then we can ask questions?
I think I only have two more, so this is just the schedule. So we finished the schematic design. We've resubmitted for permits to get that permitting going again. And so now we're starting our design development, which is where we really get into the nitty-gritty of the design. We're coming up with quantities and cost estimates and all that stuff. So that should be completed this fall. And then we're expecting about a year of permitting. So next summer we should have our permits, and then construction documents will follow after that. And then... fingers crossed, construction is starts next winter, so next late fall into the winter. So that is the schedule. Just some Q&A information. If you Mel's email and call and cell phone information, if you want to ask any additional questions or submit questions or comments, you can do it there. And then the DRP comment email as well. And then what we talked about, the meeting minutes, where they'll be posted, as well as a recording of this presentation. And then...
the recording will be posted within a day. The meeting minutes in a month.
Yeah, and so now I think we're ready for questions.
So how long would the project last?
The construction?
Yeah.
So the construction will probably take about 4 to 6 months, probably.
Now, the construction entrance, that is, to clarify, that is just going to be a temporary entrance just for during the construction, and it'll be closed after the construction.
Correct, yes. That will not be a public
that.
Well, it's existing.
Hold on. Let me clarify that. That's a maintenance entrance.
It's still there.
So it will stay
okay,
there.
But it won't be a public. It won't be a public.
No, it is not. Its use will be exactly as it is now.
Okay, that's
fine. It'll be a locked gate that says, what's it say, park maintenance only?
Yeah,
I don't know what the sign is. But the gate will still be there.
Okay.
It's just we're using it for construction, but that won't be a public entrance. And excuse me. Let me explain. Whoever asked the question a few minutes ago about the front gate, there is another project that's underway. It's in design right now. That whole front gate is going to be changed. One of the things that the county is doing is to try and make our facilities more accessible. to people with physical challenges. Mm-hmm. And so right now, that's a very awkward situation. You have to get out of your car and manually unlock that combination lock, and then you have to open the gate yourself and all that. We're changing all of that. That'll come out of there. It'll change to a combination that you actually will be able to either print out or have on your cell phone. It'll be a QR code. You'll pull up to a reader at the gate, show your code to the reader, and an electric-operated gate will open in front of you. You'll be able to drive through into the park. The gate will close behind you. When you leave, you'll be able to come out through that same gate. Do away with that manual gate and the combination lock and all of that. Make it easier for people to get into the park. And so whoever asked the question, there's going to be a little bit of grading go on out there around that entrance up at the corner. That's going to remain the primary entrance to the park.
Except for most of the because there's other parks that have that. I think Home Board is another one.
Home Board is the other one that's getting it installed. Yeah. Those are the first two are Spriggs and Home Board. And then we have three more locations to make that same kind of change.
I got a question real quick. Did everyone already discuss what happened to the gate already? Who ran through the gate?
Yeah.
We already discussed that. But no.
This is we're talking about the new project. That was reported. We're aware of the gate.
Is that part of the 4th of July celebration?
It was prior to.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah. Are there any other questions?
I have a question. With the grading, is it still going to be fenced off, or are people going to be able to walk down to the water from right now? You have the fence on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And
the fence will be replaced.
Still going to be fenced off.
It's not really going to be accessible because it's going to be so vegetated. So the fence will probably be there just to make sure that people stay, because it's more of a natural area. So the fence will be kept.
And you'll still have parking a bit further away.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm also curious because right now the access down to the kayak launch area is kind of steep.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at that thinking, well, yeah, you have to have really good brakes on a wheelchair or something to mm-hmm. make it somebody able to go down, even if it's paved over right now. So is that going into a lower area where it's been graded
yes.
down already?
It's we have to increase the length. It is kind of a little bit, as you can see, it's not the straight path that the path that's there now. You can see it here. It goes kind of directly. Here's the parking area, and it goes straight through. It's the
down and does the turn down.
It's going to be ADA compliant
and
for wheelchairs.
Yeah, and so this one is we had to make it longer in order to get that ADA compliance. So it has you have your maximum slope, and then you have a landing area and your maximum slope. So that and then there'll be a handrail there as well. So that it meets all ADA requirements there.
We're assuming during construction the entire park will be closed.
No, not the entire park. The areas where we're working, it'll be you can pretty much assume that you won't be able to get to the water, but the front part of the park should be open.
And the trails in the back, those are still
everything except down by the water should remain open. We haven't gotten out there. One of the issues is we're trying to as Anna said, trying to locate where we're going to waste this topsoil. And the overburden that comes off the beach, we're trying to fit it in between archaeological features and environmental features. We don't want to just dump dirt indiscriminately around the park, so we may have to fence off some other areas to provide a space for the contractor to spread that dirt out.
So the objection in 21 was to the impact on the submerged aquatic, the SAV stuff. Is that why it got rejected by the
That was the big one, yeah.
Are we doing anything on the Phragmites, the invasives? We're just not dealing with that at all. We're just dealing with the erosion thing. We're not dealing with the invasives.
We're not dealing with the invasives.
Okay. I don't have a question, but just a comment. I just want to say that when we did the preservation and securing, with the help of the county and the state to preserve the property, these are the very elements we had envisioned, and it's very true to what the original intent was at the time. I just want to compliment everyone for staying true to that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Quick question. Could you go back to the one with the dead trees?
The one with the tree in the water?
Not a lot.
They're called features, man. They cost a lot more when they're features. Dead trees are free.
The drawings.
It looks like cross sticks.
So just one of the park features, in addition to kayaking, that access thing is actually hiking and walking. And people do access the west and east side of these beaches on a regular basis. So this, I'm not sure if this part of this is just a drawing depiction, but that's just, is that a consideration to make sure that people can actually, they can traverse this?
Yeah. These are meant to kind of be out into the water, and they can encroach into the SAV because they're not considered impacts. So maybe, you know, as we refine, so this is kind of the existing path here, so we tried to stay out of the path here, and then we can do the same on this side. We'll take that comment into consideration, and so these need to get moved out a little bit to make sure that the beach is still walkable.
There's very little points in the park where the east side connects to the west side.
Uh-huh.
At least, you have to jump low tide, I got it, but that's just one point.
When we met with the agencies, they were, this was their suggestion to do these reef balls, and so part of it we're doing is to try to get this permitted, and also it also is providing habitat, but we're trying to do as much as we can to get this project finished.
I'm not a kayaker on here, but there is some sandy beach on the west side there, and you know, for kayak parties, sometimes they are large. They are 10 to 15 people come down there at once, and the ramp's 20 feet wide. That's, you know, having more beach accessible to that group is usually a better thought, just for consideration.
Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Just a comment, it'd be a shame if at some point oysters weren't introduced to those reef balls, because just last Wednesday, millions and millions were planted just offshore at the reef, at the Olmsted Reef. So it's pretty good habitat.
Yeah, so we don't have any intention of initially statting them, but that's definitely a hope that we have, that they naturally will grow. It has happened on a lot of these in other areas. You need the appropriate water depths and sunlight as well. So we have things working against us in this area, but it would be such a plus if it actually.
There are shorelines where it's done on purpose, and there's a program that home growers, Marylanders grow the oysters. I asked to have it done to have the ability to move some of them to our Cape St. Clair reef balls, and they were perfectly fine with that.
Okay.
So maybe we'll have that opportunity for some local growers to just plant them manually.
Okay.
Sounds like a Boy Scout project.
To add on to the kayaking comment, is kayaking the only recreation aside from walking or picnicking that's being considered? Because there's also other water sports that might be.
So I say kayak launch, but really the correct term should be car top launch, which just means non-motorized. So anything you can put on your car and bring, so kayaks, paddle boards, anything. It's just this is not meant to provide a boat ramp for motorized vehicles.
Right.
So anything else.
Windsurfers or such.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like just 20 feet on the ramp, like was mentioned, would be very congested. And I'm wondering where there might be space for those recreational vehicles, you know. Because people take a break, and where would they put their craft when they take that break? Is there a provision for that?
So we're definitely working in the confines of permittable activities. So the 20-foot kayak launch is the best we're probably going to be able to do without trying to permit a boat ramp, because that's how the regulatory agencies. We'll look at it. Once it starts getting bigger and more sandy area that is not planted with marsh, then becomes a waterfront facility. So now you're talking about a completely different permitting strategy with significantly more regulations and mitigation requirements. Because it's now, you're taking a natural shoreline and you're creating it. You know, they kind of look at it as like development. Now you're developing it. You're taking away natural areas and you're developing it for use. So,
preserving access. Yes.
Right.
Is that actually development for use, or is it preserving access for people that would use it?
So the county has actually done a great job in getting 20 feet as an acceptable kayak launch width, because the regulatory agencies don't think you need 20 feet to launch a kayak.
That's true.
You know, and so they have, you have absolute riparian access rights is something that they support, but they think 6 feet is enough. So we would then be creating beach if we were to leave to add more sandy areas that are unvegetated. Yeah. And
the issue with the last design is we were creating beach and they wouldn't let us create beach. So this is the best we can do. This is the best we can do. And let's, you know, this is a shoreline erosion project. This isn't a water access project. So we're putting in the water access because everyone wants the water access. So we're kind of doing this to try to make everyone happy. But the main goal of this project is shoreline erosion. So
is there a way that when the concrete reef balls are placed, that they're placed in such a way that they're still, for people that do have boats or crafts, they don't risk damaging them or losing tail fins or...
Don't boat near where the reef balls are.
Like I said, the reef balls. Really, the reef balls were a comment from the permitting agencies to add reef balls. So we're adding reef balls to get this permitted.
And I think that we do tend to cluster. There are clustered so that you do have open area. And then why we try to put the woody debris features in their vicinity, because you can see they kind of overlap. So we will have obstruction signs as well, so that during a high tide, someone doesn't accidentally run over them because they're submerged. So we will have that, but we do want to cluster them so that we leave some areas exposed as well for through traffic. And then we will try to cluster them with the woody debris, so no one's tempted to go over there anyway, because there's a big tree in the
way. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, please to echo and follow up on some of the statements. Do what you can. And as you're in the execution of this, if you could just imagine, you know, trying to reach safe harbor in a storm, it's fairly crazy. I know 20 feet sounds like a distance as we're sitting here in this room, but, you know, things get crazy. So appreciate it. Do what you can. Be mindful that there could be a wreck happening, believe it or not. And then sort of in that same category with the electronic gates, and sir, I'm sorry, I missed your name.
That's okay. I'm Bruce Virgin.
Bruce, thank you. With the electronic gates, what's the exit? Because one of the concerns that I've heard with the current system is people are kind of anxious, hey, I don't want to go in there. I might get locked in there.
So they park out on Bayberry.
Right. So, or with the other ones. So what's the exit procedure for the electronic?
You pull up to the gate, it'll open in front of you.
Okay, so if I, again, with the wreck, because I couldn't hit the 20-foot exit because of whatever the conditions were, I lose my phone, I can still safely get out.
Yeah, oh yeah, we can. Believe me, if there was a way we could lock people in, I'd have a few of them set up that way, but... we make it so that you can always get out.
Along those same lines, what is the power source for that if there were a storm and power were not?
That's a separate project.
Yeah, yeah.
I know, keep talking about that one.
I really have really, as a kayaker, now we have a lot of kayakers who do use that really steep steps. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, every time I ask for the gate code, I make a comment. I can hardly get up. I'm ADA. I have bad knee and titanium in my foot. And I know I've got a good friend behind me who's also using ADA issues. I can't get up those steps. I am so glad you're doing this, because a lot of people will not even code here because of the steps. Mm-hmm. They're precarious. I have fallen on the steps, even when I have two other strong big guys, help me, sitting behind me, helping me bring my boat up. Our boats, most sea kayaks, are 16 to 18 feet long, if not only 23 or 24 inches wide. And as I mentioned in the drawings I gave you, we can't get around that corner maneuver people carrying a boat, one each end, or one person using a set of wheels on the ramp around that corner. You'd be in the shrubbery within about 5 minutes. So I really would appreciate if you widen the right angle turn.
Yeah, we got your contact information. So
So that's what's the people here to hear too, because they're also kayakers, or they're bringing a surfboard.
Set that hard right.
We plan to have an ADA railing on the left hand side. That very compromises our ability to shift ourselves around the corner.
Yeah, but we have to have an ADA rail.
That's no problem with that. You just have to make it wider. Because if you ever tried
bigger radius,
come watch some of us carry boats down that hill, and you'll know the agony of it. I mean, even at Hope Farms, it's a straightaway, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, we're going to look into it. Absolutely.
Yeah, so the thing is that turn is so narrow.
What's the radius you want? You said that your boats are 18 feet long.
Sometimes they're 19
foot long. So 16 to 19.
So So we'll design for 19 to make sure that basically if you're walking down here and you carry two people carrying, is that typically?
Or a cart with one person at the front pulling.
But you're 19 plus two.
It's hard to get around.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that we have a full understanding of, you know, the pivot point and the length that it's got to get. Basically, what we look at is like the back person is standing here, and then the front person is here, and
they get over.
Yeah. Right. 19 exactly. Plus two people.
Wreck
boats are the same way, and they're less maneuverable because they're a little wider.
Okay.
And it does affect, you know, how to get things down. So I really appreciate having a flatter surface because it really will help. I'm just curious about the mobile mat, which I know you put down at the brand new place,
Beverly Trite,
which is amazing. It goes right down to the water, which is really, really incredible to allow that ADA access. That's nice. And then they were installing, I think, just split rail, I think, along one side of it. So, and it goes right to the water. I'm curious why you didn't use that as part of the sand ramp as well. Because I hate to say it, at Beverly Trident, I can't walk on that beach because the sand is so soft. It's impossible to walk on.
What was your question about the
Moby trap? It goes off to the angle to the side to provide the frontage beach access, I assume.
Right.
Because there's right now a little path through the Phragmites that goes over to across the little creek.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then it goes along. So I assume that's to establish a more permanent pathway that to be stable. But I'm just curious if the program ramp would go down.
Does it go to the water?
Go to the water also straight ahead, because I can't walk on soft sand. My ankle does not. I can't do it. I have to drop the boat.
We're limited as to how close to the water that can
Okay, go. I assume you're going to have some erosion issues if you put it too close.
Exactly. That's right. And that that's the point.
I'm just going to see what happens if Beverly Trite and how long that's going to last.
So those Moby mats are nice because they are temporary, and so they're you can move them and you can pull them. They're meant to be seasonal, really.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just kind of curious about the boats on either side of the kayak launch and where it says stealth protection. How high and wide are they going to be?
So those are going to be 1 foot taller than the sand. Cross-section. So if we take like a pie cut through the middle here, this is what it looks like. It's about 1 foot above. So that means that the sand is going to be at about +5 above mean low water. So that's about 4 feet above mean tide.
The photo from Green Haven shows it best. If you look at that photo, or go to the ones at Galesville Wharf or Green Haven Wharf.
Mm-hmm.
They're constructed the same way.
Very similar design there. Yeah.
How long are they going to be?
So I
the ones
out on
the west.
So this is 20 feet. So I would say maybe 40, 50 feet.
Yeah.
50 feet wide or long?
Each or all together?
Each. Yeah.
We have any more questions?
Yeah. Where's the parking for the cars, and is it any different than what's going on now?
The only additional parking is going to be ADA parking. We're not doing any more parking lots. It's
the parking will be about where it is now, only that fence is falling off the cliff, so we're moving it back as we're grading out that cliff. So the parking area will still be about where it is now, only pulled back further to accommodate this work in front of it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Just roughly
the loading zone going to be in about the same area, or is it going to be back?
The same area. And what will happen is the permeable surface that Anna was describing earlier, we're going to use that to pave, if you will, to put surface down for ADA parking,
right. So
that if a physically challenged user comes to the park, they can park, get out of their vehicle, and they're on accessible route all the way to the water.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So the grading is going up to the first fence then, where you ask people not
correct.
To park beyond.
Yeah, so
the grading will go up to there.
It'll be approximately to that area, yeah, to lay those banks back.
Yes, ma'am.
How will the codes be generated? Is that where somebody comes to work and they generate the code that will then?
That's a different project. You don't need a code to use the water.
So once we get that code in our phone, it will be able to scan.
The code right now is only at 30% design.
Yeah, that's
so. And this is we generally don't answer questions about other projects.
I'm just saying my whole phone doesn't generate the QR code.
Yeah, we're working on every aspect of every person's. Capabilities on things. Yeah.
Are we too old?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
we're working all angles, so.
Could you go back to the reef ball supply one more time, just real quick, please?
The one that shows the pictures or this
yeah,
one?
Like where they're at, yes.
Okay, sure. Sorry.
The whole presentation will be posted online.
We're at the park website.
Go ahead and take your pictures, but
right. I just want to take one of that.
Yeah. Okay. The presentation we post on the Park and Rec website. OPZ does not let us post a presentation.
Yeah, I have another question. At the toe of the bank, you have some stones and planting. And the water side, I guess, goes below the low water. You've got in the section, the lower section, is the lower part of that slope above the mean water,
Yes,
I'm talking about, no, keep going with your light.
Right, well, I'm just saying this is the mean high water.
Is right there at that line, okay,
yep.
That's the dotted line. That's the mean high water there, okay.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense because the grasses are going to hopefully attenuate the wave action
mm-hmm.
enough so that you're not going to get it eroded
right.
in front of the stones.
Right.
And okay.
And if it does, if the sand just happens to erode after a really nasty storm, at least we know our toes protected because we have
right.
this backup here.
So. Right. How deep is that stone going to be at the lowest part?
I'm not sure. We haven't. Like I said, this is schematic design. We haven't delved really deep into the design of these
right.
types of things.
Yeah,
but generally speaking, it's not going to be within the tidal zone. So
okay.
as you can see, the top here is a plus
that's,
six. So this would be
yeah,
just
that
a couple
looks like
feet
it's 3 or 4 feet at least.
Yeah.
The top
it's
the top.
A couple feet.
Really?
It's a couple feet. Yeah. We don't need too much. Just to stabilize the toe. We just need that rock area.
Yeah. So I'm just out of curiosity, is that MLW, is that mean
question.
Low water,
yeah.
or is that mean high water? That's mean low water.
Mean MHW is mean high, MLW is mean low.
What's the datum on
that
mean high water?
It's from mean low water, so if we say plus one, that
this
means...
This is all history, right? My point is, with rising sea levels,
yeah.
Your mean high water is going
change.
To be a lot meaner.
Even today, it is higher than what is being used. And these are what we will say the outdated mean high and mean low waters.
Yeah.
NDE still uses them, so they...
We're stuck using them.
So we're stuck using them. We've been able to push back a little bit and have them let us go a little bit higher because to say what was mean high in 2000 is not mean high today. Right. I mean, it was a very acute observation, and wish they would notice that too.
Right. So your stone will be, at some point, that will be needed because your mean high water is going to be a lot higher.
Yeah.
And absolutely. If you get a hurricane or tides, tidal surge, that's when you really have a problem with the bank.
Right. So the
landward side of that gravel, the gravel, has got to be pretty high.
Right now, yeah, we have it about plus six.
655. I'm sorry?
We have it about plus six at the top of it. Mm-hmm. 6 feet above, so about 5 feet above mean sea level, mean tide level.
Right.
So we only have a couple of minutes for questions. We're done at 7 o'clock.
I just said
I will let you make a question.
No question.
Okay.
It's a compliment.
Okay.
It's an excellent presentation. Okay. And really understand now what's going on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And thank you for maintaining the integrity of Scripps. Just a big thing for us.
Yes. Okay. Yes, indeed.
If anyone has any additional comments or questions. Like I said, you can either email me directly. I'd rather have an email than a phone call, because then I have it in writing. I mean, you can always call me, but in writing, it's just a lot easier to document. But also, you can get on the OPZ website, and they will have, like I said, for 2 weeks, we're taking comments. So you can submit directly through the OPZ website.
And it's starting now for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Can I have one quick question?
Yeah.
You're seeking approval from the zoning...
For a grading permit.
For grading permit.
Right.
So when does that occur in this point? So you're presenting this to the community, and presumably you're going to need your permit.
We will get approval from MD and Army Corps before we do our grading permit.
Okay. But then my question is still...
Within the next year.
So it's up in the air at this point. In other words, you're not trying to get the approval for zoning like 2 weeks from now, or rather from zoning to...
No, we go through MD and Army Corps prior to do our grading permit because they're required that we get those permits first before we go for our grading permit.
Oh, okay.
We need a grading permit. There's no zoning change.
Okay. But it gets approved for part of the step goes through the zoning department.
Through the office planning and zoning.
Yes. That was my real question.
It's already online. I can show you how to take a look.
Yeah.
I mean,
the original
application is still the same. Revision required, and that's why you had to do all this.
It's stagnant. It's stagnant.
I noticed nothing recent has happened. Yeah.
My question was when it becomes final.
The permitting process is the most difficult and the lengthiest part of this whole thing.
It'll probably take a year.
It very well. In the last go-round, which is why we started this in 2017, last go-round, the state had one of their reviews. They had 180 days to make comments. That's 6 months to us lay people. On the 170th day, they asked for a 180-day extension. So basically, we made a submittal, and a year later, we found out what they thought. And what happens is our consultants have to respond to those comments, make any changes, or propose an alternate method. It goes back into that cycle. And maybe a year later, we find out if it got blessed by the authority having jurisdiction. And we went through that, and that's the easy part of the process. That's the state part, because as Mel said, the United States Army Corps of Engineers is involved as well. So if there's only one thing worse than state government is slowing down things, it's the federal government. So we got caught in all of that.
Good job, guys.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Good work.
Thank you for coming.